You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by Hearst Ranch. www.hearstranch.com.
Hello, and welcome to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in New York, and I am your host for the evening. So for those of you who are regular listeners to Why We Cook, this show is kind of all about why we cook. It's about food and about food culture and history and nutrition, everything relating to food. And if you'd like to become a fan of Why We Cook, you can find us on Facebook. Just look at facebook.com/whywecook at Heritage Radio Network. We'd love to hear from you. So last night I went to a dinner party, kind of a communal dinner party where everybody brought food to make a different course. And it was really fun. It was slightly chaotic, but really fun. And it was at the house of my friend Jeff Pizzina. And Jeff owns an ecotourism lodge in Belize called the Cotton Tree. And there he grows his own cacao. And he uses the cacao to make his own chocolate. And it's pretty cool. And he runs weeks at the Cotton Tree that are devoted to just chocolate making. Or you can just go there as a guest and relax and have fun. And I'll be going there in a couple weeks, in November, for a week of fun and chocolate and relaxation with a bunch of other people from the chocolate world and the food world and just other fun-loving people. So I'll let you know about that when I get back. But if you want to learn more about Jeff's place, about the Cotton Tree, their website is cottontreelodge.com. And Jeff's going to come on this show soon, very soon, in the next couple weeks, as a guest to talk more about it and to talk about chocolate. And he'll also be joined by other luminaries of the New York City chocolate world, like the infamous Mast Brothers of Mast Brothers Chocolate and Rhonda from Ronnie Sue Chocolates at the Essex Street Market. So we're going to try to get that show together soon because their busy season is upon them all and they're getting a little crazy. A couple of them will also be at the chocolate show this weekend in New York at the Metropolitan Pavilion. If you're a big chocolate fan, you might want to check out the chocolate show and you can taste some of their product. So anyway, I was at this party last night and Jeff has a really nice roof garden on his building and he had a huge bunch of basil growing this year. And when we got to the party, he had made a whole bunch of pesto from his basil. And he took me up on the roof to show me how much of it was left and see if I wanted any. And of course I wanted some. So we picked like a full plastic grocery bag full of basil. And that's great because now I'm going to take it home and make pesto and freeze it and eat it in the winter. And I haven't made pesto in a really long time because I feel like I kind of overdosed on it in the 80s and 90s. It kind of became like a very tired cliche of menus and the food world 10, 15 years ago. It sort of turned up everywhere. And to me, pesto was sort of synonymous with the like Americanized, bastardized approach to nouvelle cuisine that was happening here that sort of plagued us for a long time, and I got really sick of it. But you know what? I feel like it's time to re-embrace it. It's so good. How can you not love pesto? So I'm re-embracing it because it is just so, so freaking good. And it has all the right stuff in it, like herbs and nuts and olive oil and Parmesan cheese and garlic. Like what could you not want from any of that? So I'm making pesto again. It's time for the first time in years, and I'm going to freeze it and eat it all winter because when it's cold and gray and wet outside in a few months, I'm going to have summer on my plate thanks to Jeff and his rooftop. So that got me thinking, of course, about pesto. And mostly when we talk about pesto, what people are thinking of is pesto Genovese from Genoa in Liguria, specifically Genoa, the region of Liguria. And Liguria is this great herb-growing region of Italy because it's right there on the Mediterranean, so it's kept temperate by those coastal breezes that come off the sea. And it has just the right climate for growing herbs, big herb-growing part of Italy. And Genoa has always been a big shipbuilding city. They're great shipbuilders and merchants. And Genoa is on the western end of a trade route that crossed straight across Italy. It started out as a Via Salaria, as a salt road, because there were salt mines in northern central Italy. And it was a salt route that went from east to west. And then when the Age of Exploration happened and the Venetians, like Marco Polo, started going east and exploring and looking for spices, it became a big trade route from east to west. The spices would come into the port at Venice, come across Italy, and then get shipped out of Genoa to go to the rest of Europe and to the New World. And when the Venetians went out and explored and conquered and brought back things like pepper and vanilla and cloves and cinnamon, they incorporated that stuff into their food. They took the spoils and bounty of the spice trade and incorporated it in somewhat strange ways into their food. Venetian food is very unusual for Italy. But the Genoese, they wanted to just keep eating their basil. They were very happy with their herbs and their basil and their pesto, and they just took all those spices and vanilla and pepper and all that and shipped it out of their port to make money instead. So they decided to keep their food just all about herbs, whereas in Venice, it became about those spices. So the classic pesto Genovese, of course, which comes from there, is just a really simple sauce based on pounded garlic and basil. And then you can add in pine nuts or olive oil and usually some cheese, some Parmigiano Reggiano, because that comes from right next door in Emilia Romagna. And pesto is supposed to be made crushed in a mortar and pestle. You can use a machine, but it really should be pounded, because that even that name pesto comes from the word that means to crush or to pound. It's the same word, the same root that also means pestle, which is the pounding part of your mortar and pestle. And the pounding, of course, was originally done out of necessity because there was no electricity, no food processors, no blenders. But also that pounding is really important for flavor. Because when you take a leafy herb like basil and you bruise it too much with a knife, if you really chop it and sort of whack away at it with a knife, you actually destroy a lot of its flavor and its fragrance. Some of those really volatile flavor and fragrance molecules, they just fly away. But if you crush it, it seems to help preserve more of the basil-y essence of basil. It stays there more. Even when you cut basil with a knife, you're always supposed to just roll it up and cut it into fine little ribbons, little chiffonade. You're never supposed to mince it, because mincing bruises it and really destroys the flavor and the fragrance. And a lot of leafy herbs act that way. If you chop them, they lose too much flavor. But if you crush them, they're okay. Or if you just thinly slice them, they're okay. And also the pounding is important because with garlic, which is a primary ingredient in pesto, if you crush garlic as opposed to chop the garlic, it won't be quite as harsh. Raw garlic can have kind of a harsh edge to it. But garlic, when it's crushed instead of chopped, isn't as harsh. And that's because garlic has two chemicals in it that when they are combined and exposed to air, form that really harsh, pungent garlic flavor. I think it's alline and alanase, and they form allicinase. Don't quote me on that. Something like that. But those two individually aren't so offensive. But if you crush them and combine them with oxygen and pound them or mix them together, you get that really strong pungency. So again, with pesto, if you just crush in a mortar and pestle as opposed to whacking with a knife or chopping, you won't get that because the knife cuts open the cells, but the pounding doesn't. It's kind of like in Thailand where they make curry pastes for their curries. They make these spice pastes out of chilies and spices. And those are traditionally made also by pounding in something like a mortar and pestle, because of course people didn't have food processors 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, but also because the crushing releases more of the oils in the chilies and the spices and gives you a lot more flavor than the kind of abusive, harsh chopping motion of a blade. So if you're a purist, you go by hand, not by machine. But, you know, who am I kidding? I'm not going to sit around for an hour with a mortar and pestle between my knees, you know, pounding away at my pesto or my Thai curry paste. I'm okay using machine. Although I like to think of myself as a only pounding by hand kind of person. I like to think of myself that way, but really I'm not. It's like I sort of like to think of myself as the kind of person who enjoys home improvement, but I'm really not. I enjoy the after results of it. But anyway, so I would use a machine, a blender, a food processor. Although I actually do have this gigantic marble mortar and pestle that my father gave me. He used to do ceramics, and I think he used to use it to grind pigments for glazes. So it's probably a little toxic for food. I think I would not use it for food. So I'm going to grind my pesto by machine when I make it this week. I have a lot of other things to do. You know, I'm busy. Like, I need time to eat more pesto too. So when we come back, a little more about pesto, but we're also going to talk about some of the other sauces in that family. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by Hearst Ranch. www.hearstranch.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. You can listen to the show live Tuesday nights at 6:30 or archived anytime on heritageradionetwork.com. And now you can also podcast on iTunes, any Heritage Radio Network show, not just me. And I'd also like to mention that my father now has a show also. It's called The Naturalist, and it's pretty interesting and pretty entertaining. You might want to check that out, too. He's a good talker. Also, you can visit me at Facebook or at whywecook.com. So there are a lot of ways for you to get in contact with me, Erica Wides, your host, if you would like to. I'd love to hear from you. Okay, so we're talking about pesto. We talked about pesto in the first segment, and what I'm really talking about tonight are sauces that you make by grinding or pounding three really basic ingredients, and those ingredients are garlic, nuts, and olive oil. That's the foundation of a lot of different sauces, not just pesto, but sauces like romesco and picada and muhammara and salpicada and all kinds of sauces from the Mediterranean and the Middle East that all really start out that way. And I was saying earlier that I was at a dinner party at a friend's house, and he had all this basil growing on his roof, and it kind of, and he made pesto, and it just reminded me of how much I love it and how I've kind of forgotten it over the years. And then I was thinking, but there are all these other great sauces too that start out exactly the same way. Let's tie them all together and do a show about it. So that's what I'm doing. So we're talking about pesto genovese, which is made from basil and pine nuts and garlic and olive oil and a little cheese. But there are other pestos in Italy, too. There's one called pesto trapanese, and that comes from Trapani, which is in Sicily. And that one's made from basil, but it uses almonds instead of pine nuts because almonds grow all over Sicily and all over the warm southern parts of the Mediterranean. And that also has tomatoes added in to it, too. There's a pesto calabrese, which is made from roasted peppers and tomatoes also. But the pesto trapanese, like the pesto genovese, like I said, uses almonds instead of pine nuts, has some tomatoes in it, and it uses pecorino cheese, not Parmigiano Reggiano cheese, which makes sense because Sicily is sheep cheese country, not cow's milk country. Pecorino is a sheep's milk cheese. Parmigiano Reggiano is cow's milk cheese, comes from northern Italy. And over there in southern France, if you just cross the border, they make something called pistou, which is pretty much the same thing, although usually doesn't have any cheese added to it. And pistou is made from basil and garlic and olive oil, and sometimes pine nuts. And usually that's stirred into a vegetable soup, a soup called soup au pistou. It's usually eaten that way, or sort of a dip or a spread. But in Liguria, where we were talking about the pesto genovese, the first one, it's eaten with a pasta usually called trenette. And trenette is sort of like spaghetti that's been extruded through a die that's square instead of round, right? Because spaghetti is a pasta that gets extruded. It gets pressed through a die. Like, remember the Play-Doh Fun Factory barbershop? Fuzzy Pumper? What was it called? The Play-Doh Fun Factory. I loved that toy. That was the best toy ever. And you would put Play-Doh in a little thing and push down a pump and it would squeeze out through these little dies. It was the same idea. Anyway, the Trinette comes out squared off. And then the pesto and the Trinette get cooked and mixed with cooked potatoes and green beans, which is kind of an anomaly because I think it's one of the only examples I can think of where pasta and potatoes get cooked and served together. I don't know of any other ones. If you know of any other ones, let me know. So anyway, I was thinking as I was eating this pesto last night, not just about pesto, but there are all these other sauces of that ilk, the raw, crushed mortar and pestle combinations of the Mediterranean that are all based on that same trio, the nuts, olive oil, and garlic trilogy that form the base, and then either herbs or peppers or tomatoes or other things are added into it. And then I started remembering all these other sauces, like Romesco. Years and years ago when I was a line cook, I worked at Savoy here in New York, and we made a sauce called Romesco, and that was the first time I'd ever had it. And since we're talking about those sauces, Romesco fits right into that because it starts out the same way. It's made by grinding dry or roasted peppers, dried red peppers or roasted red peppers with tomatoes and then almonds, garlic, olive oil. And then you thin it out with a little stock or a little vinegar. And it's really good hot or cold. And like pesto, it can be used as a sauce or a dip or a spread, or you can stir it into other things. Like Romesco is really good with eggs, stirred into scrambled eggs, or like swirled into mashed potatoes, or into other sauces, mayonnaise-based sauces, things like that. Or if you're like me and you've ever listened to my show, particularly my breakfast shows, I would put it into oatmeal. If you know me, you know that I like savory stuff in my oatmeal, and I think Romesco would be great stirred into oatmeal. And I think at Savoy, if I remember, we served it with grilled octopus, which was really good, made for a great combination. And I love octopus. It's one of my favorite proteins. Although I saw a documentary recently about how intelligent they are. Like they can find their way out of mazes and remember their way back. And that got me feeling a little bit bad about eating them. Although not enough to actually stop me from eating them. But now I have to just think about it a little bit when I eat them. So Romesco comes from Spain. I forgot to mention that. It comes from the Catalan region of Spain. And we served it at Savoy on octopus. It's usually served with grilled fish or poultry or on top of grilled leeks. Although there's another sauce that goes on top of grilled leeks that's even more authentic, but you can also eat it that way. And so it's like a pesto, but it's Spanish and it's red. It's got ground dried red peppers in it and some ground tomatoes instead of all the herbs. And usually you finish it with a little bit of vinegar or a little bit of stock to make it looser. And then Romesco has a cousin, a cousin from Tarragona in Spain. And it's called salpichada. And it's like Romesco's cousin, but it's just a little bit different. It's a little bit hotter. It's got some hot chili peppers. But the salpichada is specifically made to serve over these leeks that grow in Tarragona called calso. And they're not as big and as tough as the leeks we're used to, but they're not as tender and as small as scallions. They're kind of right in between. They're a lot like the leeks I saw in Japan, actually. A little more tender. But anyway, in this region of Spain, they grill these leeks until they're totally blackened. And then the black layers peeled off and they're served up with this salpichada. And it's a paste made yet again from pounded almonds and garlic. And this time some hot chili peppers and olive oil. Then it's pureed with tomatoes and some parsley and some vinegar until it all emulsifies and thickens. So it's a thick paste. So it's like a Romesco, but it's a little bit spicier. It has some tomatoes in it. It's made into a thick paste and then it's served with these blackened calçot, these leeks that grow in Spain. And what I love about this whole tradition is that the leeks are grilled over the flame until they're black, black, black. And then they wrap them in newspaper. And the newspaper steams them And when you pull off the newspaper, you pull off the blackened layer with it. And then inside is the nice tender leek. And then to serve them, they take these those terracotta roof tiles that you see all over Europe. If you've been to Spain or Italy or France, they use these curved tiles on the roofs. And they'll take those, these unglazed terracotta tiles, and lay the leeks out in it and serve them in that, because the terracotta retains the heat and it keeps them nice and toasty warm. And then the salpicata sauce is served with them like that. And it sounds so good. And I'm sitting here in the behind the backyard of Roberta's on a cold fall dark night looking at the blazing fire they have outside and thinking this would be a great time to have some grilled leeks with salpicata. Although I will be eating dinner after the show tonight, so I'm looking forward to that. Okay, we're going to take another quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about a couple more sauces, picada and muhammara. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by Hearst Ranch. www.hearstranch.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan, which explains why I'm talking about all of this stuff on my show. You can listen to the show anytime archived on heritageradionetwork.com. You can also podcast any show now on iTunes. So you can take us with you in your pocket wherever you go. So tonight on the show, I've been talking about pesto and its cousins, the sauces of the Mediterranean and the Middle East that start their lives off as ground or pounded mixtures of nuts and garlic and olive oil. And then you add other stuff to that and you wind up with things like pesto or romesco or the two I'm going to get to now, which are picada and muhammara, and a little sauce called salpicada. I love how they all rhyme with each other. And just during the little break there, Jack, who's the engineer tonight, came in and we were talking and he said that he brought some pesto with him home from Italy. He was in Italy a couple weeks ago, and now he's dying to get home and eat it after the show. And I have this big bag of basil in my fridge that's just waiting for me to get home. I've decided to re-embrace pesto because I hadn't made it in years. I found that I had gotten a little sick of it in the 90s, but I'm ready for it again, to bring it back into my life. So anyway, we were talking about Spain in the second section and segment. We were talking about romesco and salpicada, these two sauces from Spain. And there's another one from Spain, too, that uses the same basic formula, and it's called picada. It's not picada, like in Italy, with a T. It's picada, with a D. And picada is a sauce that's made, yet again, from a base of roasted nuts, usually almonds or hazelnuts this time, sometimes pine nuts. And they get pounded with garlic to make a paste, and then mixed with parsley and olive oil. So sort of like pesto. Parsley instead. And picada also can sometimes be bound or thickened with a little piece of bread that's been toasted and fried in olive oil first and then pounded in. Or you could just use a dried up bread crust. Or I've read recipes even where you use like a plain dry cookie or a biscuit. That's kind of cool. And those are added to act as a binder and an emulsifier and also to stretch, because all the great cooking of the world is cooking of poverty and of necessity. And people figured out ways to make things taste good and to make them go far. And extending food out with bread or with breadcrumbs is a really good way of doing that. And the further south you go in Europe, the more you find that. If you go into southern Italy, there's breadcrumbs in everything because the breadcrumbs were added as a filler and an extender. And piccata also uses dried breadcrumbs or dried up cookies as a filler, but also as a binder, but also to just make more food out of your food. Anyway, this piccata is made, and then it's thinned out with a little bit of warm water or some wine or broth or cooking juices from whatever you're cooking. So let's say you're roasting a chicken. You take some of the juices coming off your roasted chicken and you add it to your piccata and you thin it out and you warm it up. And then you take the piccata and you add it to your finished dish. But you don't want to add it too early on. You only want to add it about 10, 15 minutes before you're ready to serve it. Because what you want to do is not cook the sauce. You don't want to cook the piccata. You just want to warm it up and kind of take the edge off of it. And that's the same thing you do with pesto. When you use it for saucing pasta, you take the pesto, you put it in a bowl, and you add some of the cooking water from your pasta, the hot, starchy, salty cooking water. You mix that in with your pesto in the bowl, and it loosens it up a little bit and thins it out so it's not quite so thick. And it also just heats it up enough to take the raw edge off of the garlic. So when you're eating sauces like this, you don't have quite that intense raw garlic experience. You just kind of soften the edge a little bit, take the sharpness off of it. You still want to really taste the freshness of the nuts and the garlic and the herbs, but it just tones it down a little bit. And piccatas also can vary a lot. That's the sort of the basic recipe, but depending on what you're serving it with, the recipe can change. It can be thickened with boiled egg yolks instead. It can be thickened with chicken livers. I've seen it thickened with bitter chocolate, which is interesting. It's probably where the whole mole phenomenon, you know, happened when the Spanish conquered Mexico. They brought these sauces with them. It probably evolved that way into mole. And in Catalan cooking, where this is from, the Catalan region of Spain, you'll sometimes have a recipe, and then the recipe will have a recipe for the piccata that you should make to serve with the recipe. So it's kind of almost like a universal condiment in Catalan cooking. So we were in Italy with our pesto and France with our pistou and then Catalonia with our piccata and our sapciata and our romesco. Now we're going to take a quick little hop to Syria, to Aleppo, Syria, for a brief discussion of muhammara. So muhammara is one of my favorite ever sauces. It's great. It's originally from Syria, but it's now found all over the Eastern Mediterranean and in Turkey and in North Africa, Morocco, places like that. And muhammara is a thick red kind of paste sauce that's made from fresh or dried red peppers, roasted red peppers or soaked dried red peppers, pureed with, of course, nuts, walnuts in this case, and garlic and olive oil. So you make that paste of nuts and garlic and olive oil. Then you add the peppers to it. And then it's usually seasoned, or it can also be seasoned with pomegranate syrup or pomegranate molasses, which if you've never had that stuff, is food crack. It is insanely good. It's pomegranate juice that's been boiled down until it's really syrupy and thick, and it's insanely delicious. So that gets added in. And then the breadcrumbs show up here again. The breadcrumbs act as a thickener in this one. And sometimes a little bit of lemon juice just to balance out the sweetness of the pomegranate juice. So at its most basic, it's that combo of nuts, garlic, and olive oil. And then that, you know, all of these sauces are based on. But then the red peppers and the pomegranate give it this like really intense tang and this kind of sweet and sour flavor that, you know, really is addictive. I mean, food crack, I must say. And usually in the Middle East, it's eaten as a spread on bread or on toast or as a dip. But it's also good as a sauce for kebabs, for grilling, for grilled fish, especially the oily fish that are eaten in the Mediterranean, the mackerel, tuna, anchovies, those kind of fish go really well with very pungent kind of sauces like this. So that's muhammara. And it's a great one. It's a great one too. So I think it's really pretty fascinating, pretty cool how all of these different sauces, all of this culinary creativity kind of sprung out of a really basic, simple, economical mixture of nuts and garlic and olive oil. I mean, those three things together are delicious and could sustain you for quite a while if you were, you know, really hungry, if you were really poor and that's all you had. You could live for a while on nuts, garlic, and olive oil. You wouldn't starve for a long time. But luckily, we have all these other ingredients we can add and make all this variation, and you can kind of take off from this simple formula. And, you know, people have elaborated on it, made all these great sauces. And lucky for me, I have nuts, garlic, and olive oil in plentiful amounts at home in my fridge. And now, thanks to my friend Jeff from the Cotton Tree Lodge, I have a big bag of basil waiting for me in the fridge and waiting for me to pull out that mortar and pestle and start pounding. So I'm heading out of here now. I am going home to make pesto, and I hope you'll join me, do some of this on your own. And we'll see you next week on Why We Cook. Thanks.